Hi everyone, it's Deb. Welcome to the Starving for God BBA workshop. We are on a mission to find freedom from our food issues. And today we are on our sex inventory as part of our fourth step. And before we get started, just wanted to find out who else was on the call. So if you want to just unmute yourself, star six, and just announce yourself and where you're from and what you got.
Hi, this is Kimberly Levesser Ross, drug addict, compulsive eater from Tahoka, California.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, it's Lynn, compulsive eater, drug addict from Sherman Oaks, California.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, this is Jan from Burbank, compulsive eater.
Hey, Jan.
Hey.
Hi, this is Lisa, a compulsive overeater, addict from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hey, Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
All right, well, welcome to anyone else who jumps on the call in a little bit. Wow, this is amazing. I'm not even doing the steps real time with you guys because I just finished doing my step work like about 2 months ago. But I feel so in this particular inventory, like big time. So even just this morning when I was in meditation, you know, saying the prayer that we do, that we're going to be saying in a moment, you know, please help me see the conduct and the truth about my conduct and relationships. Like, be careful what you pray for. Because just a few minutes before the call started, like, all of this stuff started pouring in of, you know, how much fear I still have in relationships and some of the stuff that's really blocking me. And it's incredible because I so see how much I need God in this area of my life. I cannot just give God my overeating, restricting behavior, just give God my drug addiction, just give, just give God my work or my career. Like, I can't just give God just one thing. God's got to take everything, and especially in this area, because I don't know about you, but I bring so much baggage into this area of my life that I'm so blocked by my own delusions, and I don't know their delusions because I'm living them. So, before I go on and on, because I truly, like, when I sat down to write notes today and, like, you know, just kind of listen for what was coming through, like, I couldn't stop writing. So before I go in any further into this, let's go in some prayer and meditation, get grounded and get centered in God, and then come back into the conversation. So the set-aside prayer that we're going to be saying for our sex inventory is actually the little prayer that it says on the worksheet. God, please help me see the truth about my conduct and relationships. And I think it's also, you can find that in the Big Book Awakening. That's my resentment inventory. Hang on. Let me bring it to the right page here. Fear. Here we go. Page 6. Of course. How could I forget? Duh. Page 69, not intentional, but we are working with page 69, both out of the Big Book and in the BBA, and that's where you will find the prayer. So let's say that set-aside prayer. We're actually going to start with the God, please enable me to set aside, and then we'll say, help me see the truth about my conduct and relationships, and then we'll go into a couple minutes of meditation, and then we'll go for it. Okay, so God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my conduct in relationships. Okay. Wow. That was really, really interesting what just happened in my meditation. So I sometimes sing, and I sometimes sing with this friend of mine, and we sometimes sing this song that just all of a sudden came to me to, like, my, I felt this energy in my throat, and it was like this song wanted to come out, and it's that song by A Great Big World called Say Something. Say something, I'm giving up on you. And I just realized that that is so tied to my deep fear in relationships, that I can't imagine that God actually has someone for me that is like a perfect match for me because of the fear of being too complicated and the fear of being too much and the fear of needing too much from someone and wanting them to meet me on all these different levels and just feeling like it's such a tall order. There is just no way. And it's amazing to me just to get honest about that fear that's there because so much has shifted and moved and changed and grown and recovered in my personal, in this area for me. I mean, I was a total love addict. I didn't know that that's what I was. I was total codependent, total love addict, and was always in these really unhealthy relationships and was always with addicts and was an addict. But I was able to hide my addiction from myself because they were worse addicts in my eyes and was in these just drama relationships all the time. And it was incredible. You know how there's always like that one relationship, maybe we've got a couple of them, but there's like that, like for me, there was that one relationship, like that major on again, off again relationship. And you can't be with them and you can't be without them. And it's like this just, oh, my gosh, and puts you through the ringer, and you're like, well, we clearly must be together because we always come back to each other, but then you stay together for a little while, and you're like, ah, you can't handle each other. And I was in this relationship. We've actually both gotten to recovery together, and this was about 6 years ago, and he went off into his recovery world, and I went off into my recovery world, and we were kind of on again, off again. And I was so attached to how his recovery was because, of course, I had all of these expectations about who we were going to be in the world together and what our relationship was going to look like. And then eventually when he crossed over from the program he was in into BBA, I was like, fantastic, finally. And, like, you know, he really liked the way that someone spoke one night, and I'm like, awesome, you should be there. They should be your sponsor, because I knew that was a person who would really, like, you know, do the work well with him. And he had all these stories and attachments to, like, finally he's going to get the real work, he's going to have the real spiritual experience that I've been having, and we're going to have this awesome relationship. And little did I know that I was just so glaringly sick in my own area of relationship, of my conduct and relationship and my attachments, and I was completely powerless. I mean, here I was. I'd already done the BBA twice, I think, at that point. This was my third time going through, and I'd been looking at my food issues. I'd been looking at my drug addiction, and my drug addiction had been lifted. My food issues had, you know, were transforming, and yet I was so sick in this area. And I started the BBA work looking at the ways that I was chaos creating and controlling and fixing and obsessing. And I got into that work because I was in the delusion that I was, you know, that I was going to finally figure out what we needed to do to manage the relationship, what I needed to do to manage the relationship, how, what he, you know, I was very, very clear on everything he needed to do. That he was doing wrong, and so I was committed at the beginning of doing the steps to do the steps in order to be able to have a better handle on all of that. And of course, what happened as a result of submitting myself to this process and allowing God to crack me open is that by the time I got to the end of, by the time I got to the 12th step in this work, God had completely rearranged my insides. I didn't even want to be with him anymore. I mean, that's how much of a 180 this was. I was like, oh, this isn't actually in my highest. I got really clear on my sex ideal, which we're going to be talking about today. And all of a sudden I realized, wait a second, what I am, who I'm wanting to show up as in the world, and the kind of relationship that I'm looking to cultivate that is aligned with God's will is not what this is. And I would love to say that at that time everything was removed, root and branch, but it still took me, I think, another round of doing the step work and to fully, because at that point a lot transformed with what my interaction with him was like, and we didn't get back together at that point, but I was still courted, and I was still in delusion, wanting him to still want me, wanting him to pine for me, even though I knew we weren't going to be together, even though he was in another relationship. I still was attached to his attention and wanting him to still realize that I was the best woman that he ever could have had, and he lost me. And it took me, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, for that to finally, for God to remove that. I did not have the power to remove that. And that was removed root and branch. And it transformed things so dramatically that we were actually in this kind of convoluted friendship, flirtation, interaction in my four steps. This is during, it was two years ago. And I had such a transformative fifth step experience. I actually read my fifth step to a guy, which I'd never done that before, and he helped me to see so much truth. And then I had the most transformative step six and step seven. That was difficult. I was clinging. I was clinging to some stuff I didn't want to let go of, and I finally was like, God, you got to take this from me. And something happened overnight. I woke up the next day, and I was a completely changed person in this area. To the extent that even though this guy was actually on vacation in Florida, he could feel energetically like a cord is cut. He was trying to contact me, like, hey, what's going on? I feel like something's happened. Like, he could tell. And I was so completely done with it. I was done. And now we're able to have this awesome friendship because I can fully accept him for who he is. I don't need him to be anything for me to be okay. I'm not attached to his recovery. I'm just like, this is this guy, and I get to love him in his imperfection, just the way that I get to love me in my imperfection, and it is transformational. So much has changed for me in this area. I wasn't even planning on sharing that with you guys. Wow, this is just incredible. But that's why when I'm consistently, opening myself up to the question of, God, please help me see the truth about my condition and relationships. And I open myself up, and something lands in my lap of, yeah, you're still fucking afraid as shit. Because, see, I don't have a good track record. I've attracted the wrong thing in the past, or at least I thought it was the wrong thing. But I come to find that, was it really the wrong thing, or was it just what I was attracting at the time to see what I needed to see to grow where I needed to grow so I can be where I am today? And so this is what I feel, this inventory. We're going to be going over today how to specifically do the sex inventory as it relates to the BDA. And we're going to be looking at how to create a sex ideal as a result of the sex inventory that we write. And I also know that this is something that is going to continue to evolve, transform, You're going to continue to massage your sex ideal. Every year, you'll probably upgrade it as you kind of shift and change, and who you're being in the world changes, and what you're calling in changes. So this is a very, very powerful place to be. And just to give some context about where we are in the work, we're doing, you know, this term that I love to say is the soul excavation, right? So we're excavating our spiritual malady, that malady that we read about on page 52, having trouble with personal relationships, full of fear, can't control my emotional nature. This is all the stuff that we were looking at and identifying in step one. We don't have the power in step one to do anything about it. And we don't really have the power to get super honest in step one. In step one, I'm still in my delusions. That's why we need step two. We need to look at where we're blocking God, where we're blocking this relationship. I need to get aligned with this power, or at least be willing to admit that there is a power that can take me further in this area of my life, in every area of my life. And what's amazing is that even where we are in the work right now, I'm sorry, is everybody muted? Let me go ahead. Okay. Even if you're not sure about your relationship with God, if you are listening to this recording today, it means that you have enough God working in your life to get you to this point in the work, to help you to show up, whether you're listening live or you're listening to the recording. And that's enough God to get you through this portion of the work. So if you're one of those folks who's like, oh my, I still have this honest doubt, I don't know if this is going to work for me, yeah, no shit. Because we find out that it works as a result of doing the work and finding that as we jump off that cliff into the unknown, we are held. But we don't know whether or not we're going to be held until we actually take that leap. And so, well, I already touched on step two. I'll just say this more about step two, that that's our experience coming out of step one, and then we make this choice in step two that God's going to be everything. But we're so blocked by our arrogance, by everything that we think we know. That's where the set-aside prayer comes in on page 55. Please help me set aside all of my prejudice, even my honest doubt. Just, like, set it all aside. You know, the drama in my life, everything that is crowding and clouding my ability to have access to this power. And then we see what is really at the root of what's blocking us is the fact that we're selfish and self-centered and we're playing God. And we're running our life on self-will, and it's not working. And yet we keep doing it because we don't know any other way of being. We continue to rely on self. We continue to rely on self even though we see that self-reliance is failing us. And that's what we just looked at in our fear inventory. We looked at how self-reliance is failing me. But I continue to do it because I don't trust. I don't trust that God's going to actually pull through for me. And so, again, in that step three, in that third step decision, we decide to enter into a three-part relationship with God. But it's still only a decision at that point. It's only conceptual. Because we need to get unblocked before we can actually access that relationship and walk hand in hand with our Creator. And that's what brings us right into our four-step inventory process. And we begin at once to look at our common manifestations of self. Resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, fear, and the way I treat people, right? My conduct in relationships. And so that brings us to where we are today. And, you know, in my experience, most people who go out over relationships. They go out over sex issues or relationship issues. You know, and if you remember, I think it's on page, where is it in the book? Back in step one, here on page 37, in some circumstances, we've gone out deliberately to overeat or restrict, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. Yeah, what creates jealousy? You know, what sometimes creates worry? You know, sure, money, there's lots of things that create worry, but, you know, this is the kind of stuff, feeling ourselves justified. And so it's important, and I intentionally bring us back into step one and ground us in step one, because it's important for us to constantly connect the fourth step with the first step. So I can continuously remind myself of the desperation to which I need to be free from this stuff. Because it's very easy for me to now be in the fourth step and to kind of forget a little bit and feel so overwhelmed with all of the work that I need to do in the fourth step that, you know, it's kind of like, well, this is so uncomfortable that maybe it's just better to act out. Maybe I don't want to do this. You know, we all of a sudden, life gets very, very busy, gets full of more chaos, gets full of more drama, and we kind of close ourselves off to this process. So it's important to ground back into the desperation and the hopelessness of step one so we continue to have that fire fueling us. And, of course, I'm such an advocate of that line that we get on page 64, which says when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out bodily and mentally. And so I know I say it all the time, and I'm sure I sound like a broken record to many of you, but my experience has been that when I work my issues out on the spiritual plane, everything else in my mind and my body makes sense. And that relates to my food issues, that relates to my relationship issues, that even related to my chronic pain issues. Like, I couldn't just focus on the physical component, the food plan or the therapy plan or, you know, whatever those things were. I had to supplement that with my spiritual recovery in order for me to actually have the experience of being rocketed into the fourth dimension, having that recovery. So let's get into the reading. And it starts on page 68. At the bottom, now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. So I turn that into a question. Do I need an overhauling in this area? Now, what's the difference between an overhauling and a tune-up? Like, when I need to get an oil change, I go to Jiffy Lube, and they give me a tune-up, you know, and I can and they check my oil, and they check the things. If I need an overhauling, that means that I'm taking my car to be serviced. They're going to take the engine out. They're going to take the entire car apart, and then they're going to rebuild it back together. That's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a self-help course or a weekend workshop. We're talking about an overhauling. So do I need an overhauling in this area? But above all, we try to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cries that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. So here, the next line is they're kind of comparing sex to, like, spices, right? So one school would allow no man flavor for his fare. The other would have us all on a straight pepper diet, super spicy or not spicy at all. This is a very important sentence. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. This is really, really important to me. I know that there are lots of practices of, well, I'm not even going to get into that. I'm just going to speak about my experience. I don't believe that as a sponsor, it's my role to manage the sex life, relationship life of my sponsee. That's between them and God. I'm very, very grateful for that position that I have, that I take, because I had a gal contact me who was, she was in AA, just a real, real light. She was such a light in the world, but she was so deep in love addiction, so deep in codependency, so deep in chaos. She could not see the wood for the trees. And she contacted me because she had just been fired by her AA sponsor because she had gone back to her ex one more time. And her sponsor was like, if you do this one more time, I cannot be with you anymore. I cannot handle this drama. I don't agree with it. And she called me, and she was crying, and she was feeling ashamed, and she was, and my attitude was the same as my attitude is when people call me and they're crying and they're ashamed because they relapsed and sued again. I'm like, well, of course you did. Like, you clearly don't have the power to do any different. And so, you know, like, as it relates to relationship, like, box till you drop. I mean, if you're not done, then, like, you're not done. I can't fire you and punish you for something that you, like, you're powerless over. You're powerless to do any different. I'm not going to shame you and blame you for this. And we started doing the work together. I said, but I do, because I had already moved through, and this is just the grace of God. You know, we will, like, no matter how far down the scale we go, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That relationship that I had told you about that I moved through, that I'd gotten so free from, I was able to say to this woman, if we were face-to-face, I would have looked her dead in the eye. She's on the East Coast, so I felt like I was looking her dead in the eye. And I could say to her, she's like, tell me there is hope. Tell me there is hope. And I could say to her with such deep conviction in my heart, there is hope for you. I have gotten recovered in this area. There is hope for you. And we, over the next year, did the work together, and she got so free as a result of her cultivating a relationship with her higher power. And she said that one of the most critical things that was so valuable to her throughout that whole time was, she's like, you didn't know me. We hadn't even met face to face, but you showed up in a non-judgmental attitude. And it was the first time, she said, that I experienced unconditional love from somebody. And that is how we get to show up for one another in this program. That is so far beyond our own ability. You know, we're able to show up and channel God's grace. And the experience that people have as a result of cultivating their own relationship with God, when we just step back and say, I'm not the arbiter of your sex conduct, but I will hold space for you, and I will guide you through this process so that you can find your truth. Powerful, powerful stuff. Now, my experience, well, let me just say this. We get to be the beacons of healing for other people just by showing up, right, and not judging other people. But in my experience, it is way easier to be non-judgmental and all loving and all kind to people in program than to people in my own life. And I wish I could say, you know, that I play Miss Spiritual in every area of my life, and that, you know, I could say that, but that would just be a lie. What I got to see as a result of showing up in that way by the grace of God, I got to see I was capable of that capacity of unconditional love and non-judgmentalness, because that is not something that comes naturally to me. Well, let me rather say this. I'm so used to working on self-will that coming through me is probably my truest essence, my truth with a capital T, my truest nature. But that is not what I am used to experiencing from myself. My experience of how I show up in relationship is judging you, thinking I'm better than you, knowing I'm right, feeling entitled, feeling victimized, feeling jealous, feeling competitive, feeling ashamed, feeling replaceable, feeling obsolete, like I'm going to be left behind or rejected. And the list goes on and on, right? So that's again, reflecting how I show up in my relationships when I'm playing God, you know, when I'm running on self-will. But that's, I just wanted to make a little side note on just that alone, because there is so much power in bringing God into this interaction, both for people that we work with and for ourselves. We just get to experience something completely remarkably new. Okay. Lots of tangents today. Sorry about that. Okay, so we all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. This is another really valuable thing to say, because I feel like it's not, I didn't assume that. I didn't assume that everybody had sex problems. I just assumed that I did. I just assumed that there was something wrong with me, that there was something wrong with the dynamics that I was always bringing upon myself. And so to read a line and to say, no, everybody has sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. It reminds me of my humanness. And this program for me is so much about getting out of my perfectionism and getting into my humanness. And so this is another way that I get to get into my humanness. So what can we do about it? We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Okay, so the questions that we're going to get into right now, I just want to move us over to the sex inventory, because this is actually, these questions are what are reflected in your sex inventory. So that's where that comes from. So let me turn to my sex inventory. Where are we here? Okay. Okay. Now, there are a couple of examples in the four-step packet. So if you, again, if you just need like a quick reference or you just want to like get some ideas, I'm going to read you guys two of my inventories, and I hope we will get through another inventory in real time on the call today. So hopefully you'll have enough examples, but these questions, where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I at fault? What should I have done instead? These are all of the questions that are going to appear on the back side or the second page of your sex inventory, of your sex worksheet. So what belongs on the front page? Well, the front page, really, it's brief. It's a brief history on the relationship. This isn't to get into a lot of story, but you kind of get to get into a little bit of your story here, just a little bit. But it really is like when you're sitting down with someone and you're reading your fifth step with them, it just creates a context around this relationship. But we don't want to spend a ton of time on the front page, because the meat of this is really on the back page. So on your worksheet, of course, you'll put the name of the person and the relationship. Now, who's going to belong on your sex inventory? Well, let's talk about that for a second. Major relationships, absolutely. So major relationships that come up, if it's your first time doing the BBA, I would write on all major relationships. Maybe you've done some other kind of inventory before on past relationships, but if you haven't done the BBA before, I definitely recommend all major relationships. And then you might find, you know, for each one of us, we might have certain groupings. Like maybe people who I dated less than a month go into one group together, people who I dated less than 3 months go into a group together, or one-night stands, or fantasy relationships. Like, I've had full-on relationships with people in my head. You know, I write on guy friends of mine who I have been in, you know, like flirtation relationships with. And I also, I am of the opinion that this is asking about my conduct in all relationships. I've gotten so much out of writing on relationships that weren't necessarily related to sex. I've done, and again, if it's your first time going to the VBA, just focus on major relationships and, like, put your fingers in your ears. Don't listen to this part right now. If you've done the VBA work before and you haven't already explored some of the other relationships, primary relationships in your life, going through the sex inventory, it might be of value. Pray on it. See what you get. I've also written a sex inventory on my relationship with God. Invaluable. So there's some other ways that this inventory can really serve us, but I'm not looking to add more complication to especially anyone who's doing this for the first time. Just keep it super simple. If you've got more specific questions, email me, and we can get more specific about that. Okay. So write a brief history of the relationship. So these are my motives. This isn't where I'm trying to be politically correct. I'm trying to go right in for, like, what was the selfish motivation here? So so I have the boyfriend listed in the first. The relationship is, I've already stated. Okay, so motives for getting involved. I wanted the life that he promised. Now, let me also just clarify, this isn't a very, very long time ago inventory. This is like a more like within the last couple of years inventory. I would say that my inventories that I wrote the first few times I did the BBA are a lot more dramatic. They've gotten a little bit more tame. They've gotten a lot more tame. But it doesn't mean that there isn't still stuff for me to look at. But I don't want you to sit there and be like, oh, my gosh, that sounds so tame, and I sound so, you know, mine are sounding so bad and da-da-da-da. We might just be indifferent, looking at different things, different relationships. So no one's, like, you know, better than, less than, worse, you know, none of that stuff. I just want to kind of put that out there. So I wanted the life that he promised. I thought he was my soulmate. I wanted to feel desired. And I wanted to be provided for. So this is like, I like to start my sentences with I wanted. What did I want? What were my motives? My specific conduct in the relationship. I didn't listen to my inner, to my gut intuition. I made myself wrong. I tried to be different in order to be more desirable to him. Which you'll see more on the second page, but I placed expectations on him about how I wanted him to help me in business. The major points that came up in relationships. So again, you can almost bullet point this one out. This is like if you were sitting down with a friend for coffee and you hadn't seen him in a while, and they're like, oh yeah, what happened in that relationship? Oh, you know, it's like we were on again, off again. He cheated, I cheated. What I wrote here was, you know, we thought we were soulmates, and we became, you know, then we doubted each other. We never really truly saw each other. And I realized that I needed to move on, and I developed a deep resentment for him, a deep resentment of him. Those were like the major points that came up. How it is or how it ended now, this is truly just how it is or how it ended now. You can write, we broke up, we are, you know, both friends, I stalk him on Facebook, whatever you want to say. I wrote here, we were a little,
on again, off again. Then we broke up but still had feelings. I was energetically courted to him. And then I finally had, like, I finally released him fully, and we're now friends, but I still judge him. Okay, that's my honest about where I am. Okay, so you get the idea. The front page is like, you're just filling someone in. It's not a big deal, but you do want to focus on, like, you're not trying to make yourself look pretty here. You're saying it how it is. Okay. Then we flip the page. God, please help me see the truth about my conduct in relationships. All right. So this is where I'm going to look at my selfishness. Where was I selfish? So with this guy, I was manipulative. I was acting from fear of not being enough or being too much. I was concerned mostly with how I was feeling. I wanted to appear a certain way to him and to our friends. So he still desired me. So where was I dishonest or misleading or deceptive or fraudulent? I was in delusion about our compatibility because I wanted the vision of us so much. I tried to be low maintenance so he wouldn't think I was a princess. I pretended like I wasn't interested in money at all when really his wealth and success were very attractive to me. Where was I inconsiderate? I talked negatively about him to my friends. I posted a poem on Facebook that was about him, not using his name, but all of our mutual friends knew it was about him and depicted him in a bad light. I didn't consider his feelings, and also I didn't consider his feelings when I ended things while we were abroad. Whom did I hurt? So I'm not just going to write his name there. I'm also going to consider all the people in around the relationship. So I hurt not just he and I, but also our friends. Jealousy. Okay, so these next three questions, 5, 6, and 7, they typically go together. They're kind of like three musketeers. Typically, if I arouse jealousy, I typically will have aroused suspicion and bitterness. Not 100% every single time, but like typically. So in this regard, did I arouse jealousy? I did. I tried to with one of our friends. After he and I ended things, I would flirt madly in front of him. Did I arouse suspicion? No, I actually didn't. This is one of the few times that I did not have all three answered. Did I arouse bitterness? Yes, by being inconsiderate, uncaring, and avoiding him. Okay, so then we get this question, where was I at fault? So this is an important one. This is kind of like a catch-all for everything that I've just seen on in questions 1 through 7. So I kind of glance back at those things, and I can see kind of the general themes here. I was misleading about what I'm really like. I was more interested in what he offered as a partner than if we were really compatible. I was disrespectful in how I spoke about him after we broke up, and I pretended to be friends when I was actually really bitter, and I pretended not to care about his money. That's where I was at fault. Okay. The question number 9 is an important one. So question number 9, it's like 8 and 9 kind of go together. Like 8 is the kind of the summary of 1 through 7. And then 9 is me looking at 8 and considering what should I have done instead of what I just did in question number 8. Now, you don't get away with saying not gotten involved in the first place. You don't, that doesn't fly here, obviously, you know, obviously. But, like, looking back at the answer that I put to question number 8, I can reflect on what I should have done differently. So, one of the questions I always ask myself in question number 9 is, if I brought God into this, what should I have done differently? And sometimes I'll actually write, I would have taken this to prayer and meditation before pursuing, you know, like I would have what has actually brought God into the process of this relationship. Sometimes I actually feel called to write that. But what I wrote here was been honest and upfront about my preferences, my personality, and how I really am. Been willing to accept that he might reject me based on that, and looked to God to help me fill me up and remind me that I'm not lacking or too much, but that for the right person, I am just right. I should have been more honoring and gracious after our breakup. So that's what I wrote there. And, of course, at the bottom, it's the specific harm that came up in the relationship. So when, you know, these are specific. This isn't just like a general thing. So this is where I had the, you know, that poem that I wrote. Because he actually called me. He's like, was that poem about me? I mean, so that was, I needed to make an amends to him for that. And also, just where I was being agnostic, like where I was trying to be the woman he wanted me to be. I was trying to be in the spiritual, so I was being inauthentic. I was being dishonest. I was withholding and being dishonest because I was essentially agnostic, not trusting God, and not honoring my truth. So that's an example there. I'll read you one more example, and then I want to open the call up and see if we can go through one in real time. Okay, so the next one, this relationship was actually a fling with this guy, and my motives for getting involved, I was intrigued, I wanted to explore. I liked that he had multiple homes, and he was an artist, and he was successful, and I thought he might be able to take care of me. My specific content in the relationship, we flirted. I let him kiss me even though I didn't really want to. And then I didn't want to embarrass him. Like I kissed him because even though I didn't really want to, but I didn't want to embarrass him. So what I wrote in there is I was trying to protect his feelings, and I was feeling guilty. Okay, that's my specific conduct in the relationship. The major points that came up, So I started to pursue him. He had enough going for him that I started to pursue him, but I then wasn't sexually attracted to him, but I let him kiss me a few times. On the last time, I backed off, and then he sulked and avoided me. Those are the major points. How it ended, I made an amends for not being in my truth from the very first kiss, and also for the abrupt way that I handled turning him down. We became friends, and with a hint of flirtation. Okay, that's how it is now. Okay, so selfish. But where had I been selfish? I'm trying to read my writing here. Oh, these are my notes from my sponsor. Hold on. I'm confused. Oh, is it? Okay. She's very sweet. I'll mention this in a second. Okay, so I made a decision to kiss him based on self. I didn't want to seem prudish, and I didn't want to deal with the awkwardness of turning him down because I was actually in his car at the time. He was giving me a ride, and I felt like it was awkward. And so I totally made a decision based on self, and I have this little note from my sponsor from when I was reading the fifth step, that she's like, can you see that this is the best that you could have done at the time? Can you have compassion for yourself? So we'll talk more about how to listen to and how to give a fifth step in the next call. But and I also have here that I used him in my selfishness. Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? I wasn't sexually attracted to him, but I flirted anyway because it was fun. I was misleading with my flirtation. Where was I inconsiderate? I disregarded the fact that he had just been through a breakup and was tender and raw. I had disregard for how my actions may have impacted his best friend, who was my housemate. So whom did I hurt? I hurt this guy. I hurt my roommate and his best friend. And then I also wrote the ripple effect of people who I've done the exact same thing to or similar things to. Because, I mean, this guy, let's face it, he is representing
an entire litany of people through my entire life that I've engaged in this kind of, like, I don't really want you, but it kind of feeds my ego for you to flirt with me kind of thing. Oh, my gosh. So it's just, I just wanted to acknowledge the ripple effect of that. Jealousy, I don't actually think so. We were in a relationship. Suspicion, maybe, because I was blowing hot and cold. Bitterness, yes, because of how I handled turning him down. It caught him off guard, and he got defensive. Where was I at fault? Acting outside of my truth to appease someone else and not have to deal with awkwardness and his feelings of rejection. Anyone ever done that before? I don't want to deal with his feelings of rejection, and so I do something that is compromising my own gut intuition. Being misleading, continuing to flirt when I knew I didn't want to pursue it, using him to fill my loneliness. Okay, what should I have done instead? Ask God to fill up the places inside of me that feel lonely, deficient, and afraid, so that I don't use people to try and fill that void. Been honest with myself and with him, letting him know where I was at. Trusting that God has someone for me and I don't need to settle or create chaos in another person's life to try and wrest satisfaction out of mine. Okay. And I don't know why I didn't write any specific harms that came up. But I actually had already made an amends to him by the time I wrote this, so it was kind of retroactive. I guess the specific harm would have been I really kind of very, very clumsily rejected him, and it was very awkward. And, I mean, that's why I actually made an amends to him, and it was awkward to make the amends, but I did it. And anyway, okay, so that's that. So you get the idea here. Okay, I have been talking for way too long, so let's get somebody else on the call who is willing to go through their sex inventory in real time. So go ahead and star six yourself, unmute yourself if you'd like to share.
Hey Deb, it's Lynn.
Hi Lynn.
Hi. I know Kimberly is going to do one in real time, but I thought that if I could, I would go over one that that I did last year when I did some inventory.
Love it. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so this is a boyfriend. My motives for getting involved were I had been interested in getting to know him for a long time. I hadn't dated in a long time, and I hadn't dated in sobriety, and I was worried about dating someone that goes to the same meetings as me, and I liked that he had separate meetings. My motive was to find a love connection. My specific conduct in the relationship was he was pretty upfront with me about just wanting a friendship, as he wasn't in a position to be in anything more. My behavior was to win him over. I did this by manipulating him, by being his friend and helping him through a really hard time. I wanted to be the one he needed and wanted, and I tried to accomplish that by always initiating getting together, assuming he was too shy to ask. My conduct was always thinking I knew what was best for him and acting on those thoughts based on what I would want in the same situation. I managed and controlled the heck out of the situation and put my needs in front, and put his needs in front of mine a lot. The major points that came up in the relationship, because I always put his needs first and suppressed my own, only occasionally trying to express my needs and not liking and ignoring the answers or non-answers I got from him. I ultimately got frustrated with him, not expressing to me verbally and physically how he felt about me. I felt starved for affection and love, which I so wanted from him. I got tired of trying to figure out if we were more than friends, when in the end he admitted we were more than friends, which I always knew in my heart. I had expectations that admission would translate into him showing me how he felt.
And when he didn't, I was hugely disappointed. How it ended or how it is now, I basically ran away. I started to withdraw before actually letting him know and started looking elsewhere for a more satisfying relationship. How it is now is confusing. It's extremely hard to be friends only when I still have feelings for him. Where had I been selfish?
So just a quick question, just right there.
Sure.
Thank you. Wow, that was awesome. That was so awesome and thorough. So it sounds like you guys, the way that you've done it before is like you guys write like a lot more in each section. You kind of give like a real case history in each section. Yeah?
I don't know that that's the right way. That's just something I did. I mean, I don't know that everybody in L.A. does it that way. Not to differentiate the L.A. contingency from the San Diego contingency. But that's not how I talk. I kind of ramble. So if that's not the
okay.
right way and it should be bullet pointed, I will take that under advisement for sure in doing my sex inventory upcoming.
I don't think it's a right or wrong. I don't want to wrong make at all. If you prayed and you asked to be shown and you got guided and you wrote that down, I wouldn't change anything like that. I would the way that I was taken through was like just to keep it a little bit more like shaved down, but that doesn't mean
okay.
it's right. It's just how I did it.
No, and
I was just curious. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say, I did this last year because I was really in some pain, and so my first sex inventory was like 5-6 years ago, and I did do a lot of writing there too, but nobody said anything to me, so that's just how I did this one, quite honestly.
Sure. And maybe that's exactly how it all needed to come out. Okay, so I'm listening to the back page. Go ahead.
All right. So where had I been selfish? Giving him the impression I was okay with the relationship as it was, when really I was waiting for him to feel better and show me the affection I wanted. I was selfish in that I ignored the rest of my life and people close to me. Where had I been dishonest? I tried to be honest with him. To a point, but I ignored his responses or non-responses. I was dishonest with myself that he could change. And now that I'm thinking about it, this is just what I wrote last year. I'm sure I could come up with a lot more now, but that's all I wrote at the time. Where had I been inconsiderate? I was inconsiderate in my dishonesty and my managing and controlling behavior. Whom did I hurt? I hurt him, myself, and others around me that I ignored, including my mom and my son and my friends. Did I arouse jealousy? Not in the relationship, but the fact that I started dating so quickly after aroused jealousy. I do not feel I arose suspicion, but I did arouse bitterness for sure after the fact. Where was I at fault? Making him my higher power. I was two-faced. I was dishonest with him, with myself. I managed and controlled and manipulated, to get the relationship the way I wanted it to look and feel. What should I have done instead? I should have taken suggestions of sponsors and friends who saw the truth I couldn't see. I was completely unwilling to try it another way. I shouldn't have managed and controlled the situation. I should have seen the early signs that he was possibly not the romantic match for me. I should not have settled, and I should see the truth and not live in what I think it could be or what I want it to be. That's it.
Awesome. Awesome. Any specific harms that came up?
That's so interesting. I didn't even put harms on here. Yeah, I harmed him. I harmed my family and friends. I harmed my employer. Oh, my gosh, my employer really got the brunt of my unmanageability in this relationship. Yeah.
Mm. Awesome. And when you consider, like, the harm that you caused those people, one of the things that was pointed out to me by my sponsor that I always just pass along to other people is consider the harm of me assigning his role and essentially like robbing him of who God would have him be in that moment.
Interesting.
I'm not even sure
I totally connect with that yet. I mean, it's like I have to contemplate that. I need to hear that again, actually.
Yeah, and probably there's another way that I could have just that I could have said it too. I think within the context maybe of like reading a fifth step, maybe there's a little bit more flow, or like a comment like that, like feels like it lands a little bit differently. But the place that I go to, and this comes up mostly when I'm looking at relationships with parental figures and stuff, but it oftentimes comes up with relationships with primary people in my life, which is just considering, like, you know, because you mentioned I was making him my higher power and there were clearly, like, roles that were being assigned to who he was or what he was about. And so,
in that way,
it's like, you know, I have this kind of, like, expectation of, like, how, you know, like, the role that he is and the role that I am. And, you know, there's all this kind of, like, you know, self-will motivated kind of role assigning, which is, you know, there's no room for God to be in there assigning the roles if I'm in there playing God assigning roles. I think does that say it in a slightly different way?
I'm starting to get that now. Yeah, interesting perspective.
Yeah. Again, and it was like, you know, when it was shared with me, it was like really illuminating. It might have just been really illuminating in that moment for that context, and maybe that was just, you know, my own, it was for me to see and not necessarily for you to see. So I'm just throwing it out there, and you can take it or leave it alone.
Yeah, no, thank you.
That was an awesome inventory. Thank you so much, Lynn. Kimberly, do you want to hop on the line, or?
She was trying. She's having trouble getting on. She's in the other room at my place, so give her a second.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Is she getting it? Okay.
No, she's trying to get on, and yet we're not hearing her.
Oh, that's so weird.
Okay, wait. She's gonna grab my phone. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So hold on a second.
Okay.
Here. Yep.
Hi. Well, that's convenient that the two of you are together. Awesome. So, are you ready?
Yeah, I did mine on God.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, awesome. Have you written it yet, or are you going to do it in real time? You've written it. Okay, cool.
Well, I've written it in real time.
yeah, beautiful. Done. I love it. Yeah.
Okay, so obviously the name is God. The relationship, fair weather friend. my motives for getting involved were told I needed one for a 12-step process. As a child, I was told there was a God. My specific conduct in a relationship has been one-sided, don't care what he thinks or wants most of the time, only call on him when I need or want something. I don't listen to him most of the time. I use him and blame him for my life. I'm critical, and I'm constantly testing him and want him to prove himself to me. The major points in our relationship are, and I believe, like I, in this conversation with God, so, how one-sided our relationship is, that God is sad that I don't listen to him or trust him, how God wants to help me but I won't let him, and how God is there for me when I need or want something from him. How has it ended or how is it now? It's in a take it or leave it situation. God is all in. I'm the one that needs to make a decision where we go from here. Rarely and selfish. I wanted what I wanted, only caring about me, rarely considering what God wants. Where had I been dishonest? I pretended that we are closer than we really are. I say I want this relationship, yet I don't act like it. Where have I been inconsiderate? I don't consider how my behavior affects others, only thinking about me, always putting myself first. And I expect God to be something that he's not, i.e. a pimp, the lottery, the bank. Who did I hurt? I've hurt myself and possibly anybody I came in touch with under the auspices that I was so spiritual when I'm not. Did I arouse jealousy? I don't believe God gets jealous. Did I arouse suspicion? I don't believe God gets suspicious. Did I arouse bitterness? I don't believe God gets bitter. Where was I at fault? I shouldn't have pretended I had more of a relationship than I did. What should I have done instead? I should have been more honest. I should have taken more responsibility and made this relationship important. I should have opened my heart and mind to God. I should have allowed God to love and help me. I should not have been so afraid. I should have been more willing. That's it.
Amazing. I love it. I love that. I love it. Do you feel like there are any harms? Do you want to write on any harms?
Well, I think the harm, and again, I didn't want to minimize the when I said I was inconsiderate, that possibly, hurting others, because I don't want to be so grandiose to say that, everybody's been affected, that I've come in touch with. But I think under the guise of somebody who's supposed to have time in the program and, be this spiritually whatever person, I certainly misrepresented him. And so in the harm, I think that, at times could have given God a bad rap, that, if people were looking at me going, God, if that's what God looks like in her life, I don't want anything to do with it. And I think I've been a lousy representative at times.
Yep. That's actually exactly what I was feeling guided as you were just sharing just now a second ago. I was like, oh, well, the harm is, the ripple effect of not always representing who God would have you be in every moment,
right.
like how agnosticism has affected, how you are showing up in life and
right.
just considering that ripple effect. Absolutely. That is really powerful. That was awesome. Have you written
that's
that?
That's how we roll in L.A. Okay?
I know. That's
the L.A. contingency. That's how we do it up here.
have you written on God before?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. It's such a great one. I love it. In fact, I think the suggestion actually came from Dan Sherman through Tyla, maybe. I can't even remember where I got that from. But anyway.
Probably from me, but that's okay.
Probably from you. Probably. So wonderful. Okay, so now I don't know if either you or Lynn have your last sex ideal available. I want to get back into the book for a moment and just read the rest of the sex inventory section here and get into the sex ideal. And then I'll read the example that we get in the four-step packet, and then maybe we'll even get a couple of live sex ideals here. I actually don't have mine with me right now, so I can't read it. But okay, so we've just done this.
I have one, Deb. If we have time, I have one.
Oh, yes. Of course we've got time. Okay. So in this way, we try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life, our future relationship life. We subjected each relation to the test, was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. I have not... Well, maybe one or two sponsees, maybe. I would say 90% of the sponsees that I worked with and the people who I've taken through in workshops have had some kind of sexual abuse or trauma, like molestation or rape or, you know, like so much. So I know from working with so many of you that there are layers and layers of shame and guilt and all this stuff, and I encourage you to really hold the sacredness of looking at this stuff and including in, I actually integrate this into the fifth steps that I do where it's appropriate. I mean, it's something that is kind of comes through me in the moment. I don't like plan ahead of time to do this kind of stuff, but of actually really sitting with that little girl or little boy or, you know, or woman or man or you know, that part of you that feels very ashamed, very wrong, very guilty of whatever happened. So even though that's like kind of not necessarily a main part of what we talk about in the BDA as it relates to the inventory process, I also just want to highlight that because there might be some kind of ceremony that you can either do in your fifth step or by yourself to really be with that part of you that is that healing. That anyway, if you want to talk to me more about that offline, or even if you want to ask me questions about it right now, we can talk about it in real time. But I've just seen incredible healing go on when people connect to that part of themselves and allow themselves to feel the compassion for the little girl, the little boy who had to deal with something at a certain time in their life. Okay. Whatever our ideals turn out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, providing that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. We are not going to talk about amends right now. It's just letting us know that we're going to be doing amends. We will get into the specifics of that because oftentimes if there is an X, you know, we really need to be in some, like, prayer meditation and in some consultation with our, you know, step partner or sponsor and, like, really checking in with what is in the highest about approaching somebody who maybe has already moved on with their lives. In other words, we treat sex as we do any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will always come if we want it. I have found that to be true. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge, and I find that to be true. We realize that some people, and let me just make a note about sex. I know I was like so vehemently, you know, I don't judge people's sex conduct, but I do ask questions. You know, like I like one of my favorite questions is like, how is that working for you? And, we can still ask questions. It doesn't mean that, like, we need to be, like, tight-lipped about all of it. It's like, huh, I'm hearing this. Like, how is that working for you? I do that. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Okay, so here is a very important question. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean that we are going to relapse, act out around food? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. That's why it's very important for me to get clear on my motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, then we believe we will be forgiven, given, and we'll have learned our lesson. I was just in a meeting on Thursday night, a BDA meeting, and someone actually pointed out this word lesson, learned our lesson. And he spoke about it for, you know, for his 5-minute share, and it really illuminated for me, like, hang on, this is actually a really important thing that it's saying here, because I'm here to learn. You know, each relationship is coming into my life to help me grow in understanding and effectiveness, not in my on how to handle my relationship, but growing in my understanding and effectiveness in my relationship with God. And so am I learning as I'm going? And I feel like, you know, what I got to learn from these relationships who I have written about, who I've read to you today, there has been so much healing and so much empowerment and so much beauty and grace that has come through as a result of having learned, wow, seeing this truth and having learned certain lessons. So this, I think it's actually an important thing to note. So if we're not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, then we're quite sure to act out with food. That has been my experience too. We're not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So to sum up about sex, to sum up about relationships, this is, again, this is some really good instruction here. We got a resentment prayer. We got a fear prayer. And now it's about to give me the sex and relationship prayer. We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. That is powerful. God, please give me sanity and the strength to do the right thing. It's so simple, and it is so powerful. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves and it quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. Now this is giving us a review for this whole section. So if we've been thorough about our personal inventory, then we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We've begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all people, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. Remember, that's the key. Sick people like ourselves. The key is sick people like myself, not just that sick people, right? We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. And, of course, we'll come back to that in the 8th step. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision, which you made in step 3, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, which you are making in step 4, then you have made a good beginning. And I love this last line, especially for us in the Starving for God workshop, because I'm such, even in my coaching practice, I'm all about how can we work things out on a spiritual level to affect what's being manifested on the physical plane. And so here it says, that being said, you've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. I have been stuffing lies down my throat my whole life. I have been cramming myself full, trying to fill up, feeling empty, feeling spiritually bankrupt, feeling, you know, like energetically empty, feeling like a shell, feeling like I have nothing to offer, and filling my life up with busyness and with work and with drama and with food and chaos. And here it's telling me what I really need to do is swallow and digest some big chunks of truth about myself. And what I'm going to get through this process is deep, deep nourishment by cultivating a relationship with God. So, with that said, I want to just go back to the sex ideal thing that it's talking about.
And what we are going to do, so listen up, this is important. After you write out all of your sex ideals, you're going to lay them all out in front of you, and you're going to ask God to help you shape a sound and sex ideal, a sound and sane sex ideal. You're going to read the answers that you put to question number 9 for all of your inventories. And what's most likely is that you're going to start to see some themes. And from those answers to question number 9, that's why you really want to get, and you, these two examples that we heard today were really, really rich and juicy. Give yourself the opportunity to, like, really write something that feels, you know, well-considered, because you're going to be using that to shape this ideal. So the sex ideal is not about what you're looking for, you know, what you're going to put on Match.com. I want this, this, and this. It's actually who you want God to have you be moving forward, how you want God to have you show up in relationship moving forward. And so I'm going to read you the example that they give us in the 4-step packet, and then it sounds like we've got a couple of examples to hear from the participants in this workshop. So here's this example. God, in the future, I would like to be a person who has sex with people that I truly care about as an act of love and a way to be closer. I want to have some time to get to know the person so that I can make a decision that is based more in reality and less in sex, or in just not wanting to be alone, i.e. filling the gap. I do not get involved with people who are committed in a relationship on any level, or while I am committed, I respect my friendships. While they may not be in a committed relationship, I am sensitive to their feelings, and I don't get involved with someone that they have strong feelings for. Did I skip a line? No. I think I just read it wrong. I should wait to emotionally commit to someone until I have dated them for at least 3 months. Okay, so that's what that person felt guided to write. So let's hear a couple of... one or two sex ideals from you.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Okay, and, you know, I want to just also mention one thing, and I don't know if this is really, if there, I like how you said that there's no wrong, but I did that with this ideal. I looked at you know, my question 9, but I also re-reviewed my resentment to the same person, and I meditated on the sex relations, what a real woman would do, and I incorporated some of that as well, and I found that really, really helpful.
So, I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Really beautiful.
Yeah. All right. And I was taught to always start my sex ideal with, may I always remember to put you, God, first in all my relationships. God, please show me how to be the woman that doesn't rely on a man for her happiness or completeness. Please show me how to be a woman who stays true to herself, her passions, her interests, and not ignore herself when in a love relationship. God, please help me to find balance in my relationships, and to help me to see that my relationships, or I'm sorry, help me to see my relationships as they truly are, not how I wish them to be, so I can act with integrity. God, please give me the power and conviction that I must stand up for what's important to me and not compromise my core beliefs for anyone. Stay true to who I am. Help me remember that my esteem does not come from anything outside of me. Please show me that. Show me how to be a woman who honors herself by aligning herself romantically with men who want the same fundamental things in a relationship and who have similar interests and goals. Someone who builds me up, makes me full, and I'm a better woman with them. God, please show me that I don't have to do all the heavy lifting in the relationship, a woman who doesn't give more than she gets. Please remove my fear and show me that I don't have to manipulate and control relationships in order to feel or be important or feel needed. God, please remove my fear of being alone
so that I don't settle for someone who is not right. Please show me that it is okay to live in the gray, that I don't need to know if he is the one or not. God, help me to grow towards and live up to these ideals. God, please give me the power to be the woman you created me to be. Amen.
Oh, I love that. Gosh, I love that. This is such a powerful, powerful thing that we each get to do. It really does. By the time we're at this place in the work, I have seen so much. I have swallowed a lot of chunks of truth about myself, and I am so open and available, and the most beautiful prayers come out of this practice. And I am a huge fan of going into your fifth step, having written your sex ideal so that you can read your sex ideal in your fifth step. I was listening to, we'll talk more next week about the actual fifth step, but I think that someone was a little confused because they were working directly out of the BBA, and in the instructions for doing a fifth step, I think it maybe wasn't mentioned or something like that, and so they thought that they only wrote it afterwards. But I feel like it's really, really powerful. You might, in your fifth step after reading it, you might choose to add one or two things to it, which is beautiful. But that is just really stunning. Anybody else want to share a sex ideal? It's like so perfect that we're like Valentine's weekend. This is just such a perfect, perfect freaking topic.
Okay, Deb, I have one. This is Kimberly.
Okay, great.
This is from 2008. Like Lynn, may I always remember to put God first in all my relationships. May I have the courage and the willingness when asked what is wrong or what is going on to be honest and not sidestep it or minimize it because I'm afraid. May I not have anger and frustration as my primary response and instead take the time to explain myself, or more important, to listen, truly listen with interest and intent to be helpful. May I be much more honest and be willing to say how I feel instead of acting it out in some passive-aggressive way. I want to also be able not to compromise myself out of fear to someone else's standards. May I be more carefree, easygoing, thoughtful, not always having to do something or go someplace. I want to be able to just relax and enjoy the moment. I want to be more present, kind, and loving. I want to pause and really see the person for what they are, not what I want them to be, and I want to have the courage to not make the relationship more than what it's supposed to be. Show me how to be okay in the gray. I don't always have to have an answer or the answer. Show me how to be a partner versus a boss, mother, sponsor, leader, director, know-it-all, control freak. I don't want to be so afraid that I cling or hold on to something or someone that either I am not good for or they are not good for me. Give me the courage to walk away. May I not use money as a weapon for power or big shotism. God, please mold these ideals and give me the courage, willingness, and honesty to live up to them. God, please take me to better things. Amen.
Wow. Both of you, just absolutely beautiful. So moving. So moving. Thank you so much. I want to, anybody else, before we wrap the call up, anybody else want to share, want to ask a question? You don't have to have it all. Yeah, go ahead.
It's Lynn again. And, you know, the only thing I want to add to this, which is so beautiful, and, Kimberly is my sponsor, so I definitely got guidance from her, and there were a couple of incarnations of my ideal to get it to where it was. But the beautiful thing about it is this inventory was last year when I was really struggling with this person, and we're at a different place in our relationship now. And what I get to see is that I am growing towards these ideals. I'm acting, with God's help, so much differently this year and at this time in the relationship than I was 8 months ago. And I haven't read this in a while, so to read it and to see, even though I'm not on the mark all the time, how much more integrity I'm living in the relationship, it's just proof that this works. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Yeah, it's so beautiful. And I know, like, just being back into this process, I am just reminded of how valuable it is. And I know I always say this to my sponsees, and I've obviously let this one fall off a little bit, but actually keeping that sex ideal prayer with me, or, like, you know, tucked in my big book, or, you know, in a place where I can read it more consistently to just ground myself back into that. But it is also, like you said, nice to be able to see, wow, God's just actually shifted these things in me, and I can see that showing up in my relationship.
Right, and in my first sex ideal, when I was, you know, just over a year sober, I kept that ideal. It's still actually still in my wallet, and I looked at it almost daily, and it really helped to just keep looking at it. I don't know why I didn't quite do it with this one, but I did for a really long time, my first ideal.
I did the same thing. I think I had it like laminated or something. I was like, this is like becoming a bookmark, which I actually is actually it's really valuable. And I don't. Yeah, you're right. I didn't do that this time. Okay. Does anyone else who maybe hasn't shared or who already has shared want to make another comment, ask a question?
Deb.
Hi.
Sue. This is Sue from Massachusetts.
Hey, Sue.
Hi.
Hey,
listen,
Sue.
Could we get Lynn and or Kimberly's the prayers that they just gave as really model examples?
Yeah. I mean, if they are willing to offer those and email them to me, I will gladly share those with the group. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For a fee, Lynn and I will pretty much do anything. So we'll forward them on to you.
As I was talking, I'm like, I think that I'm speaking on behalf of them, but maybe I'm yeah, that's great. I know those were such beautiful examples. So at this point, what I just want to run by those of you who are on the call right now, you know, when I'm doing live workshops, this is often the time when we actually take a break, but I feel like I want to do one more recording or live call to actually talk about the fifth step, or at least how I do the fifth step, or how it's been, you know, handed down to me to do the fifth step. And I guess I just wanted some feedback from you guys. Would it be more valuable to have like one more week of like open discussion and talking about the fifth step, or would it be like fine to just kind of get a recording from me before or on next Sunday, which just kind of says this is how I do it, and at this point it's really about people, you know, completing the work and getting up with a, you know, getting with a sponsor and kind of and finishing their fifth step. So and by the way, when I talk about the fifth, it's going to be 5, 6, and 7. So that when we decide to take a break, we're going to be breaking for about 2 weeks, and then when we come back, we're going to be on step 8.
Debbie?
Yes.
This is Sue from Massachusetts again. I think it would be valuable if we could do one more, maybe not the full 2 hours, but something where you're talking about the fifth step, and if we could get some people to give examples, I think that would really, because when I went through this originally, I kept thinking, well, I'm doing all this work and I'm sharing it with my sponsor. Why am I doing a fifth step after I've done all the resentment forms and stuff? You know, and the sexual,
mm-hmm.
I've already shared it with my sponsor. Why am I doing it again with my sponsor?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
yeah.
that's just my experience.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm feeling guided to that. So I'm just going to, I don't think anybody would object to having another week. So I'm just gonna say that we'll just do that. Next week we'll be talking about the fifth step, 5, 6, and 7. And, you know, I get that question a lot, Sue, actually. People are like, well, you don't need to hear all my inventories because you've already helped me with so much of it. And it's phenomenal to me how
there is a complete, there is an energy and a flow of the fourth step, and the fifth step is its own thing. And it is so powerful. Even if I've heard your inventory before, like when we set that container, when we create that container and we bring God into it, and I am essentially bearing witness as you share these things with God and open your heart, it's so, and I know you've experienced this before, like, but it's so transformational. And I often find that new truth comes in, that new information comes in, either to you, through you, or to the person that you're listening, you know, to the person that's listening, or through the person that's listening, and it's its own experience. So even if I've heard almost every inventory from somebody before, I listen to every single thing again, and it's always different, always different. And there are other specific things. There are three main questions that we want to make sure we're asking in each inventory that allows the fifth step to really, really, you know, if you're somebody who's listening to a fifth step, your role is to bear witness and also to tee them up for six. And there's a way that we do that in the Big Book Awakening to really facilitate that. So a person has an opportunity to see as much as they need to see to really have their experience with six, and then to do their seven steps. So
can I add something to that, Deb?
Yeah, yeah. Who's speaking right now?
It's Lynn.
Hey, Lynn. Yeah.
Hey. So to Sue's question, because I thought the same thing, and I, like you said, Deb, it is so amazing. It's amazing the whole process working with a sponsor, because even when I'm doing my resentment inventories and I'm not able to get to my delusion and she's helping me go deeper, and so she is in and around my resentment, she might not be paying attention to absolutely every one of them, and I'm still learning, and I write it and I go, yeah, that fits. But there's something to meditating before the fifth step and really taking ownership of the resentment inventory, especially the fourth column, and before I'm ready to really be in the fifth step, I'm really looking at those defects and I'm really seeing my self-reliance and how it fails me. And there's just some ownership of that I'm taking. It's not that I'm waiting for my sponsor anymore. It's like I can really see it. And so, you know, I want to give this to her. And so there really is so much value and so much power in going through it.
Yeah, Lynn, I love that. And thank you for sharing that. And it's interesting because I, like, as you were speaking, I got this analogy that came through. And I don't know if anyone's ever done anything like this, but when you get like a reading or whatever. Anyway, I did something called an Akashic reading once, and I don't know, I'm not going to go into like what that is, but essentially, you know, you, like, this person like goes into your records, and I was imagining, you know, what happens. So we're in our fourth step, right? We're writing it, and we're kind of in it, and then when we come into the fifth step, it's like these two observers who are going to sit down together and are going to call upon God to watch over and the spiritual process. And just like Lynn said, I get to be the observer of my life. And so I believe that perspective brings out a different kind of experience and illumination. And the same thing as a sponsor is, hopefully through every inventory that I've been helping someone with, we've been bringing God in the whole time. But even more so, when we're sitting down for a fifth step, I'm in so much surrender. And I fully get that this isn't actually about them confessing something to me, but rather me showing up and bearing witness and being the manifestation of God listening while this person shares their truth. And it's so there's a different experience for the person listening to. Anybody else want to add to that? All right. Any other comments, questions as it relates to the four-step inventory? All right. Well, then let's close the meeting. Awesome meeting. Thank you so much for your shares and your questions and just for showing up and just for being here. I know that each one of you who spoke up today have helped many, many people just with just your comments and questions. So thank you. So let's close the meeting with the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Thank you for being here. I am so excited that we have, I'm just so excited about this call, about this process, and I will speak with you next week.